Welcome to Snobby Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I'm with the SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Star of Elite Warlord. Just a reminder, join us on a talk cast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone to dial 605-562-0444, just follow the directions, call ID 17702. Or you can participate on the web, just through the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for call ID 17702 or Star of the Universe On Call, and you will find us there. Also, of course, we do a co-broadcast over over twitch.tv. Just go to twitch.tv/SFUOnCall, and you will find us there. Feel free to join the chat room, follow us, and let's have a good old time. And of course, if you want to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, my account there is sfuoncall. And I'll tell you about what's the latest episode and also post the links to the YouTube videos. And of course, I have my personal account at Paul Franz. It's PaulFranz. You can follow me there too. And that will, of course, just a reminder that I am very proud of being a Catholic and O's fan. And I love all kinds of tech, especially Apple tech. And of course, I have my tertiary account, which is the Franz Games. If you want to follow that one, you can find out about the latest Starfleet Warlord and the very latest happenings on SFB Online. And of course, the lovely talk cast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Yeah, I'm really doing great tonight. So, a quick update on Steve Patrick. Yeah, he has really bad cataracts, so they pulled his driver's license. So until he has surgery, he probably won't get his driver's license back, or at least won't be able to drive legally anyway. I don't think they actually grabbed his driver's license and took it away. It's just that he can't use it legally. That'd be my guess at the moment. And still haven't heard anything on the ADB Facebook pages. You know, I'm hoping to hear a little more goings on. But, you know, Jean's still recovering from her surgery, I'm sure. But we'll soon shall be seeing stuff there. When it comes to the Sapphire Star Tournament, looks like there might be another one, which is not going to be run by Mr. Patrick, but might be run by Andrew Koch, which would be fantastic, so we can have another one. I got an email about that, and unfortunately I got it last night, and yesterday was a crazy day. I didn't even look at my email. To be honest, and today, you know, I don't check my email much on Thursdays, just because I go away from work to making dinner to preparing for the podcast and creating the podcast and collapse and go to bed and get up bright and early tomorrow morning. So that is what it is. When it comes to other things for SFB Online, not much happening there. Same for Starfleet Warlord. You know, obviously, we just have that new game started, new Die Hard, which we had a little difficulty getting started, but we got it started. So, if you want to join us for that, if you're a Starfleet Warlord player and you want to join us in the latest Die Hard game, we still have spots open. And I usually keep it open for 3 turns, which actually these days means 3 weeks, because we run a turn every single week for the first 10 turns, and then after that we settle back into the normal 2-week schedule. So with that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one and only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Star for the Universe On Call. And tonight, well, it's just me and the chat room, and Lord knows I hope this is working, because dang it, man, I've been fighting all my technology tonight, because I did something. Well, I was trying to resolve all the issues that I've been having with some of the technical issues. Don't get me started. I spent pretty much a whole weekend just redoing my whole computer, and it's freaking mess, and fighting it just drives me up just the freaking wall, you know. And of course, then I upgrade the latest OBS, and OBS now broke things. It's like, oh, great. You know, this was definitely not the beginning, auspicious start of my night, you know. So, and hopefully you guys enjoy me this ranting because of my, this, okay, thanks, Dave. Thank you. Dave says things are working good. That's good. That's, but things like, well, the one key feature that I like using in OBS is the hotkeys. And now they have it so that they scream about if there's a collision. Basically, you have two, they have the same hotkey assigned to the same function. Well, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to have it so that I can press one key and it does two things. But the, you know, I'm not sure at the moment why OBS hotkeys are now freaking broken. So I can't use hotkeys at all, even though, you know, I resolved the conflict. The hotkeys still don't work. I'm not sure whether it's because I upgraded to Monterey or whether because I upgrade the latest OBS. I have no clue. So that's my kind of night. So hopefully we can have a little better night after that start. No, because Lord knows. No. Well, things could be worse, you know. The winter storm that's supposed to hit this area could hit early, and I could lose power in the middle of this. So it should be. Anyhow, I'm sure you're tired of me and moaning and groaning by this time. So please. I know the reason why you actually are listening to me at all, if you're listening to me, is because you want me to talk more about Starfleet Universe stuff, as in like Starfleet Battles, Federation Commander, things like that. Actually reminds me I need to set up a teacher page for FedCom because Seth Szymanski has volunteered to be a teacher for people that want to go on the FCOM online. So it's going to move up by 10 a.m. Sorry, got distracted by the weather report from Dave, which to me is important to me, that the WMZ, which is the local TV station, which actually is up north of me. It's in Allentown. It's like an hour drive north. It's supposed to have a coating of ice. Now, I'm not sure if the coating of ice is for up in Allentown or a coating of ice is down here in Reading. Because I noticed that little Reading is supposed to get more sleet and then freezing rain, then switch over just to rain sometime, you know, in the morning. Now, I'm not sure when in the morning. I'm not, of course, even after it switches to rain, okay, so it's rain. So it's no longer freezing on, hits the contact of the surface. Is it going to wash away all that frozen ice? Or what's going to do? I don't know. And I was too concerned about even the possibility of just getting out there, all of a sudden find this large icy patch and then ending up in a ditch. So that is what it is. But moving onward to something a little more happier, because Lord knows that we can use a little happiness these days. Okay, there it is. Wonder. And a bitch. There it is. Okay. Because I figured I would actually go back a section when it comes to Starfleet Battles rules. And though I did hit on a couple things from Section D, last week, you know, the whole energy balance due to damage. And I forget what the other one I hit on, which were both quite just crazy. You know, the energy balance due to damage was optional. Oh, yeah, I think I mentioned about the positronic. I think last. What the heck was that? I don't know what that was. Let me just look at this for a moment. Oh, you gotta be kidding me. Okay. Hold on, people. Hey, Barry.
Hey there.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, my daughter went into Target for a few minutes, and so I'm sitting in the car. figured I had a few minutes to talk.
Yeah, you definitely have a few minutes to talk, and Lord knows, I just got started 10 minutes ago. had issues with the computer, because I was resolving issues last week because my hard drive died. Well, not quite died, it just wouldn't boot. Whatever.
Your hard drive, what?
It wouldn't boot. Okay. I couldn't boot off the hard drive I used for booting.
Oh, that's not good.
No, not good at all. And the hard drive is actually acting a little flaky. I got everything off it that I need to get off it. So I was able to get a new hard drive and restore, you know, get things, everything start up again. But then, of course, invariably the problems with various issues. So I was bemoaning those, you know, for a bit.
That's why I have a NAS. At home. So if I lose something, it's like, well, it's all backed up on the NAS.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. It's not that I lost anything because I had everything backed up. I have my Time Machine drive, which has everything backed up, which is how I got everything back. You know, so I had no issues. I didn't lose anything. It's just that it was just the number of hours I spent recovering everything. You know.
Yeah, and I've got RAID 5 on my NAS too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay.
Understood.
Yeah. Why not? If you're gonna do that, why not do it right?
Oh, well, I agreed.
And apparently there's some way I could set it up so I could access the NAS over the internet, but I haven't figured that one out. I have to use HTTPS, and then I have to set up the NAS.
Right. Do you have like, Synology?
Oh, God,
do you have Synology?
What's that? I have Synology, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's what I thought, because what you're talking about, I've heard from other people, because I know that other podcasters I listen to, like David Hamilton, Leo Laporte, and I don't think that's the two main ones that I know definitely use Synology NAS devices, and they love them, because I know David Hamilton, what he does is for his, he set up Docker. So he can install these different containers, set up these different containers to do things like doing a cloud backup and things like, actually he can sync his NAS, his Synology with, I think Backblaze is what he's got set up for. So he can directly back up to the cloud from his NAS device, from his Synology. Which is quite cool.
So he can take his laptop when he's on. Because for me, it would be nice if I could take my laptop on the road and from a hotel, back up stuff to the NAS at home.
Oh yeah, actually, Synology has that. Doesn't that Synology have that support?
At least they have it. They have that, but I haven't figured out how to use it.
Okay. Yeah, because I've heard they have a cloud service. But what it does, it just allows you to access your files. You know, your cloud is still Synology, but they just kind of have it as a routing point. Is the whole idea? At least that's what I'm thinking. You know.
Yeah. Oh well.
Right.
So what in Starfleet battles are we talking about?
Actually, we're talking Section D of the rules, is what I've been talking about, the SFB rules as of late, the past three podcasts. I talked about direct fire device, different direct fire devices, well, rules, different direct fire rules last week, and actually the past 2 weeks. And I figured I'll get back to actually the combat section, you know, the different combat systems and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, some simple things, of course, start off with when it comes to combat is you've got, of course, direct fire weapons and seeking weapons. So I went through the direct fire weapons with people. The multitude of direct fire weapons, from Hellbores to PBDs to just plain phasers. And, of course, the different ideas when it comes to direct fire weapons, i.e., your the hit or miss kind of weapon, like a disruptor or photon.
Roll for damage.
Right, or the roll, more of the roll for damage, where you actually have a table which you look up the damage that you do on a particular roll. And right. of course,
and then there's some that use both.
Yeah, but that now you're getting to Omegas.
Yeah, now you're getting to Omegas.
Right.
Yeah, the Rex Fire weapons can be, the standard ones are, and then of course Hellbores throw a little quirk into things.
Right, and that's one of those crazier weapons that people like, but at the same time.
It's a powerful weapon.
It's a very powerful weapon. Yeah, but the biggest issue, of course, I think, and I've seen this brought up from other people writing up tactics articles, and that is, of course, some people get lazy with Hellbores. That is, instead of still seeking that down shield. They go, oh, I got a Hellbore. I just have to fire at the ship. I don't have to worry about, I got that one down shield the one time, so I don't ever have to worry about trying to get that down shield again or creating a new down shield. And they get lazy.
Right. The second down shield does make the Hellbore even more effective.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, you definitely want to have down shield because that's the least strength, the shield with the least amount of strength, which is great. So
yeah, well,
half the damage goes right against that shield.
Down shield, then
down shield.
Or 2/3 if it's two.
Exactly,
down shield.
And some people get lazy and they stop trying to get that extra down shield or get their direct fire weapons round to that down shield, that gets pointed out by some SFB players. Now, to be honest, I've never seen that, but at the same time, I don't play against that many people playing with Hellbores, and most of the time they're against Andromedan, so it doesn't matter.
Well, the other thing to keep in mind is that. Lazy is an interesting way of phrasing it, because if I've got somebody with a down shield, then I'm guaranteed to be able to do half my damage to it. Now, at that point, if I try to maneuver to catch somebody's down shield, then I'm going to... there may be tactical implications or malices that I might get, because it's like, okay, they can more accurately predict my movement. The other thing is that, if I try to use other direct fire weapons, but the other thing is that, well, now that I've got a down shield, I have the option of bearing the power to charge the other weapons. If I don't think I'm going to get a down shield direct hit, and if its circumstances are, well, I can put my power into the Hellbore and other things like movement to improve the chances with the Hellbore, but I have to sacrifice other weapons, that might be tactically advantageous. Or if I can maneuver so that I'm in a place where I'm hard to hit, but I can still hit the other guy, and I don't have to worry about getting to it. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of, once I have a down shield, the Hellbore gives me a lot of tactical flexibility.
Understood.
There may be other considerations, and yeah.
Right. I understand.
And that also applies to a weakened shield. It doesn't even have to be down, just weaker than all the rest.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, Mike, when it comes to the Hellbores, yeah, I agree that there's some of the top-tier weapons. But I disagree saying Fusion might be the very bottom. Fusions are...
Fusions can be nasty.
Oh, no kidding. And that's exactly what it is. Yeah. Is that as a ranged weapon? No, they don't. Fusions don't work as a ranged weapon. Fusions are killer as at range one. They just blow things away.
Or even better, zero. That's the ultimate dogfight weapon.
Oh yeah.
Like charge, get into range zero, and boom. That does huge amount of damage.
Oh, agreed, yeah. Agreed. And
you're up against four fusions at range zero with overloads. Game over.
Exactly. Oh, I agree. Mike is saying that, you know, out range four and up, they're pretty useless, and I would tend to agree with that statement. Mike's saying that the disruptors are ultimate.
I'd say range two.
Long range dance weapon. Kind of.
BBDs are the ultimate long range dance weapon.
That is true. Because, oh man, that thing can just beat the crap out of you. The only benefit of when it comes to disruptors at all, in my mind, is the flexibility of either charge or not charge for a turn. Now, that's one thing. I've mentioned multiple times, and people are probably tired of hearing me mention it, which of course is the particle cannons. Now, the particle cannons, yeah, when it comes to having to retain the charge in the capacitor, you have to use half the power that's in the capacitor to hold that much, the other half, basically. But one of the benefits of the particle cannon is the way you can use it. You have three choices. You can fire standard, you can fire it overload, you cannot fire it at all. And if you've not fired at all, you don't lose the energy per se, you know? You still got a charged weapon.
Well, yeah. The particle cannon and disruptor are probably the two most flexible heavy weapons in the game.
Yeah. Of course, the bad thing about particle cannons, of course, the hit can suck because it's like a photon torpedo in that category.
It does less damage and it's less accurate than a disruptor.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, agreed.
It has the advantage of a partial hold or a leaky hold.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And you could potentially fire it a second time in a turn.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally agree.
Although that second firing is more of a threat than something that's typically used.
Oh, I totally agree there. I might have used the second firing once in all the times I've played the Celtorian.
Yeah.
Because
I forgot, can you fire it overloaded and then you can't fire it overloaded twice in a turn, but can you fire it overloaded and standard in a turn?
Yes.
Yes.
That I know. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Although, and that takes what, four power to do that?
The second firing takes 1 point of power.
Right. But the first overload takes what?
Three or four. Three.
So for four power, you've got an overload and a standard firing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you do.
And if you, but as you pointed out, it's rare to get that second firing.
Yep, exactly. It is very, very rare. The only time you'd ever get that second firing is if you have... You're kind of forced into an early attack run. You know, early in the turn is when
My daughter is walking.
Okay.
My daughter is walking back up to the car, so.
Okay. Well, you have a good night.
I'll see you.
Have fun with your daughter.
Good night. Bye. Bye.
Okay. But anyway, we'll continue on that just for a moment. Yeah, the tough part about using a particle cannon at all and get that second shot is you have to have an early attack run to begin with. You have to get it in the first half of the turn. And then instead of turning away from, after the battle pass to recharge and regroup, and then reevaluate, you have to then turn back. You can turn away, then turn back, but it's a rare thing that you actually can turn back and then to get your particle cannons facing him. Because remember, one thing that when you're firing at him, he's firing at you, and invariably, what happens? He most probably will knock down the shield, or at least get the shield very. If it's very weak, you can turn back. If he knocks it down, you might not want to turn back to go face him, because what's going to happen? You're going to give him an opportunity to fire at your down shield. Now, depends upon the weapons arrangement of your opponent. Now, most probably, he'll get something new to bear, because he's turned away himself, and his offside weapons now that he couldn't fire now will be able to fire. And given a down shield, most people, even at longer ranges, they're willing to take the shot because you've got I was going to give the odds, but I really don't know the odds well. I know you have a chance of getting a phaser, a particle cannon, or a web breaker, when it comes to the Saltorian. Because you can get a drone hit, a phaser hit, or a torp hit. Or, of course, you can get the other ones, but you're looking for the weapons hits. Come on, let's be honest here. So, anyway, moving onward and forward, why don't we just start talking about, because obviously tonight's going to be a short night just because I started late, but I will get on to some of the combat rules. As I mentioned, they talk about, of course, there's direct fire weapons, seeking fire weapons, which is seeking weapons. Seeking weapons are like drones, i.e. missiles, and plasma torpedoes, things like that. One thing about Starfleet battles is how range is determined. There's two ways. If you've ever played tactical games, there are two ways of counting range. One, the difference between the two units. So if you have this unit here and this unit here, right, they're hexes right next to each other. There's two ways of counting that. You can count that as range one, like SFB does, or you can count that as range zero, which I forget. I know the other games that count that as range zero. Why? I don't know. Because to us, it makes sense that it's range one. Because to us, range zero means same hex. Of course, also some other games, you're not allowed to have two units in the same hex. So that might be a reason why they consider that to be range zero, is that they're considered right next to each other. That's, versus in the case of SFB, I forget where it says it, but I know in the rules it says it, which is how big a space an actual hex is. And the hex is huge compared to the actual size of the ship. So it's so that's why, you can actually have two ships in SFB, you can have two ships inside the same hex, and they will never run into each other. It's And as I mentioned before, that there is no ramming rules in SFB where two ships will actually collide. If they actually collide, it's... Ah, thank you. Thank you, Mike. The size of the hex is 10,000 kilometers per hex, which is huge. Compared to a ship, it's huge. So, you know, thank you. Thank you, Mike. Also, this is actually an interesting rule. D1.5, which is friendly fire. Let me just read this real quick. There are some cases under which a unit may be compelled to fire on a friendly unit. A ship is on the same side. This is known as friendly fire, a term that indicates the origin, not the nature of the firepower involved. To prevent player abuse, there are several restrictions on this procedure. Units may not fire upon or guide weapons targeted on a friendly unit, except in the case listed below. They're talking about capture, self-destruction, things like that. One thing about D1.53, one of the sub-rules, friendly seeking weapons can be fired upon without restriction. This rule applies if a weapon has a chance of scoring one or more points of damage, regardless of whether or not the actual damage results from a die roll. Here's an interesting one. Self-fire. There's actually a rule for this, which is self-fire on D1.56. Ships cannot fire at themselves. Launch seeking weapons at themselves or guide seeking weapons towards themselves. Ships cannot allow their weapons to explode in the launch tubes. You might want to do it, but your weapons group do not appreciate your motives. Yeah, I know they had the right rule for this, Mike. ECM Jones, your station keeps are obviously exception to this rule. While ECM drones could also carry explosive loads, an ECM drone using station keep will never explode because it never hits the targets. Now here's a interesting one for the Andromedan players, which is D1.57, Andromedan Maulers. Andromedan ships may fire at their Maulers for purpose of recharging energy, but only if the fire cannot, by mathematical chances, exceed the capacity or penetrate the panels. This rule does not allow a Mauler to fire at other Andromedans, including other Andromedan Mauler, nor does it allow a non-Mauler Andromedan to fire at other Andromedans. So, as strange them, and here's the funny part. You read that one little caveat. By any mathematical chance. So mathematically, there's no way. Basically, they want to make sure that you can't do internals. And Lord knows, if you've ever read the Andromeda rules when it comes to energy and releasing energy from the panels, that's another one of those things. You can't do self-harm. Actually, that's going to be D10 is going to be the rule section. And in D10, it does mention this, which is if you do you turn off panels, you go from reinforced down to standard, so you release energy. You cannot do such a thing if it causes even one point of internal damage. Because normally, for the Andromedan ship, that if you hit a panel and the panel goes and you basically it's weird, it really is, which is the whole idea is that if you hit a panel and it does degradation, which means it releases that point of energy, and if your other panel or panels depending upon if you're a base or not is full, then that energy then will go into the batteries, or it could also go into an energy module. But let's say they don't have an energy mod. Let's say you just have batteries. And your batteries are full. That point of energy is internal damage. So, and the thing is, as a Andromedan player, you cannot release energy from your panels in such that it will cause you damage. So it's like, that sucks, you know, because Lord knows there are some times, and this is as crazy as it might sound, there are some times that I would actually like to be able to do that, you know, because to me, it's a great benefit to me if I take one internal, even if it's a TR beam, if it's a battery, I'm hurting myself tremendously, but to get a battery is really hard to do. You're more likely to get a hull. If you could do that, especially with large motherships, it'd be a great benefit in that case, if you're in that dire straits, to be able to cause yourself internals, but you can't. So, anyhow, of course, the firing arcs, how the firing arcs actually work. Let me just see if. No. Don't mind me. I want you to see the screen, but of course, that means something that I really don't want to do, but I have to do it anyway because of this thing is not being really dumb, which is that. So, this is the arcs. For those on video, you can see the arcs. Standard left, right front, left, right, left rear, and right rear, which is, nice. I think that, of course, here's the combination firing arcs here, which are, that's always, to me, it was always kind of weird. Guys can't hear me? Okay, let me just check something. Hello. Oh boy. I lost oh crap. Okay. Sorry. Okay. Thanks Mike for telling me. Okay. Yeah. Okay, I'll work on that later. One of my softwares I didn't enable, and I didn't realize that for that one, I have to double check on that. I really do. It's OBS, the way it's configured. I think I have the audio source as the wrong thing. But anyway, okay. For those on video who saw, at least they could see it without even hearing me, which is, of course, you got the left front, left, right, left rear, and right rear. To me, always the weird part about this was, of course, the plasma. Now, LP, interesting. Actually, that makes sense, Dave. LP and RP make sense because of that. Those are kind of weird arcs because they go right, the left and right P arcs for plasma. They slice right on the shield, the shields, they go for like the LP arc goes from the very edge of shield number 6 as it goes on to shield number, let me make sure I get this right. Sorry. Goes all the way between, the shield line between shield number 1 and shield number 6 goes all the way out and all the way around to between shield number 3 and shield number 4, that shield boundary right there. Goes right there. And of course, that's RP. Forgive me. The LP is the opposite, which is between shield number 1 and shield number 2, that shield line there, all the way around to shield number 5 and shield number 4, that shield line there, that's LP, which makes sense. You know, that makes sense. But then, you, of course, you have the FP, which is basically, for direct fire weapons, is FH, front half, which goes from the border of between shield number 2 and shield number 3, goes around up to the front of the ship, around the front of the ship, to the shield, the dividing line between shield number 6 and shield number 5. But FP and FH are the same. Basically, they cover the same arc, but they're still called differently. So you always use FP when it comes to plasma. FH is always used for direct fire weapons. So, and of course, then you have the combinations, like what's called forward arc is left front and right front. And normally the arcs I denoted earlier go right out the hex side. So they go like left front goes out shield number 1, which is right in front of the ship, to the hex side, which is shield number 6, and goes straight out shield number 6. And so it's that arc there. It's that arc in there. So, and for there's actually forward extended, which is a really good arc. Yeah, it's almost 360, but it isn't. It's you know, from out going straight out, shield number 3 going around the front of the ship, all the way straight out, shield number 5. So it covers a huge swath of arc. Okay, and then there's the special arcs that are for different ships, like the Klingon wing phasers, and also, does it have this? Because I could have sworn. Okay, I think they've removed it. Or let me just look. Yeah, they don't mention it. I could have sworn when it comes to the Federation, that at some point, okay, at some point they had it so that the front half phasers, I think it was, could go directly aft, just like the Klingon when it comes to its front extended phasers can go directly aft. I could have sworn that the Federation could do the same thing. But I don't see it. Or maybe it was, you know, maybe it was different phasers. Maybe it's only for certain Federation ships. I'd have to double check there. So, of course, shields. Yeah. Now, if anybody has ever played or even read the rules for the FASA's Star Trek tactical starship game. Oi. That was one of those games that I played. I never played with another person, but I played by myself as a kind of a see how I might like it. And the one thing that I really did not like about FASA's Star Trek tactical warp, you know, tactical starship game, was that you had to divert your power to the different shields, the different weapons, and so forth. But it wasn't Starfleet Battles. It's a little more, when it comes to the shielding, it's more passive, which I think it bears out when it comes to at least the original series, because you never say here, at least I don't remember. And please, chat room, please either tell me I'm full of you know what, or back me up. And that is, I don't think you ever hear Captain Kirk say, you allocate energy to this shield or this shield or this shield, you know, because the whole idea, because in the Star Trek tactical war game, you only had enough shielding as per how much energy you put towards that shield. So if you put no energy towards that shield, you had no shield. Which to me is, after I played Starfleet Battles, that whole idea is crazy. While Starfleet Battles, you just have to give it enough energy to have all the shields to their respective strengths. I.e., you can either have a full strength shields or your minimal shields. You can actually have minimal shields, cost you much less, and in some cases you might be doing that. You know, if all you need is enough to shield you from miscellaneous, you know, rock damage or asteroid damage, you might have it, or something like that. You know, something that's like, there are minimum shields, which are 5 boxes, versus, you know, for full strength shields, you got, for I'm just gonna go from standard heavy cruisers. When it comes to Federation heavy cruiser, you got 30 box shields on shield number 6, number 5, and number 2. I did that probably whatever. And then down on, you know, shield number 3, number 4, number 5 is the rear arc shields, and that is 24. Now, just a reminder about the shields themselves for those of you not familiar with Starfleet Battles, and that is each hex size represents a different shield. And so if you ever looked at a hex, you know, hexagonal map, which is kind of important, especially with Starfleet Battles. You put a ship in one of the boxes, the hexes, and then each hex side is a different shield. And then, you know, those dividing lines between the hexes for each one of those, well, that's the dividing line becomes the shields. And that's so that if you draw out those lines that define the points between the different shields, you draw those out, then you can figure out what shield gets hit when a ship fires at that ship. I know it seems complicated, but once you see it in action, it's quite simple. Unfortunately, I can show it to you, but then I can't talk to you, and I'm not sure if that really is helpful. So I apologize, especially to those on the podcast, because I just realized that when I switched off, the people on the video feed could see something, the people in the audio feed are going, I can't hear anything. It's blank. It's quiet. And hopefully I'll be able to edit that out. So in this case, you'll go, what quiet part? So ignore me. Okay, you know, they talk about with shield, the shield boundaries and so forth, which is D3.41. And there's various rules for that. And D3.43, resolution of ambiguous situations, which is always fun. Because of, in theory, you can actually have two ships, range 2, right on that shield boundary. Now, if you're moving, it's relatively simple. Okay, there is, you know, D3.43, resolution of ambiguous situation. Okay, it says A, if both ships are to move simultaneously in the next move, this movement still leaves the situation unresolved. Judge the shield situation only the ship target had moved. B, if the next move results in a situation unresolved by A or in both, both of the possible shields being turned away from the firing ship, resolve the situation by judging which of the potential target shields could have crossed first. C, if no other means is possible, use one of these methods to apply damage. Option number 3 is use unless the players have agreed in advance to a different option. Number one, divide the effects of the weapon in half and apply it to both shields. Number two, toss a coin or roll a die to determine which shield is actually hit, which is kind of interesting. And then lastly, but not leastly, number three, allow the owning player or of the target ship to select the target which shield was hit. Now, note, the decision is made at the first point. Either player asks for determination must remain the same from that point until the next impulse. Even if nothing changes, this decision can be changed each impulse. The decision, so in other words, you're right on that shield boundary and you got to option three. You know, if you're both like moving zero, that can change every single impulse, which is really interesting because that forces you or at least your opponent to fire as much weapons as possible on that one single impulse. So you can't really split it, because if you split your fire, he can say, oh, shield number, like in the case of side by side, where you're basically having you're splitting between shield number two and shield number three on one side and five and six on the other side, you know, the two different ships, if they're like this, you know, two hexes apart, then they can just go back and forth between the two. Oh yeah, you knocked down that shield. Oh, I'm sorry. Next impulse, oh, I'm sorry, you hit my good shield. You know, it forces that situation. The situation is no different than if two or more ships fire on the target were in different hexes along the same spine. This is used if two ships are linked by tractor beam range 2. It also is used on impulse during impulse number 32, because you can't move. The method used by may be selected by players by mutual consent should be used consistently throughout the entire scenario, i.e. you don't change it between scenarios. Oh, sorry, between points in the game. Of course, unless both players agree, which I think is kind of silly, to change the rules in the middle of the game. You know? And transport is a little different. Don't worry about it. You know, obviously, you can drop shields. The whole idea of there's a procedure. The main important part of the procedure is there a delay. So if you drop your shield, usually you drop a shield to transport, like you might want to transport like a T-bomb, or you might transport hidden run rates against your opponent's ship, or you want to put boarding parties on your opponent's ship and try to capture the ship. That's a lot more difficult, to do than you really think. I forget if FedCom is easier. I think it might be easier if you're playing Federation Commander. But you know, there's a quarter impulse delay, i.e., eight impulses from the time that you drop that shield to the time you actually can raise it again. There's always that from, and just, I'm not sure if I mentioned this before, but that is the golden rule for SFB activities. That is, as a general rule, meaning overall arching, unless otherwise specified. For example, when it comes to the Saltorian particle cannons, that's 12 impulses between each firings. When it comes to, we haven't hit this, but we'll get to it in the future, which is a Type C Zinti drone rack. It's an interesting drone rack, to be honest. And this is why the only reason I mentioned it is because it's the only drone rack that can launch two drones on the same turn. The only issue, you have to wait 12 impulses between launches. So that's why I brought up in when it comes to the particle cannons, because they both can fire twice in a turn and both have a 12 impulse delay between usage. So in general, you can only use a system, weapons or otherwise, once every impulse, 8 impulses. So if you have four transporters and you use 3 of the transporters and an impulse 32, impulse 1, you only can use 1 transporter because you're still waiting for the other transporters to come back online. You can't use the same transporter within quarter turn of the previous use. So, and that's general rule when it comes to systems. So, damage allocation, pretty simple. I'll talk about that a little bit late. Okay, it doesn't mention here before I do anything else. And no, I don't see it. Yeah, I don't see. Just give me one sec here. There it is. Okay, yeah. It does mention in this section, ship shield reinforcement, obviously. So you can use additional energy to reinforce a shield. And damage allocation, of course, an opponent fires on your ship. You first have to determine the shield that it hits. And then from that shield, then you... any weapons fire first takes out any shield reinforcement that you have on that shield. Then after that, then it hits the shields. And if it gets through, if it knocks down the shield itself, you know, all the boxes are gone. Then you go for, not quite go for internals yet. Now, you have to determine, does that ship have armor? Like in the case of the Klingon, like the warbird, the king eagle, the eagle, you know, those older Romulan vessels who actually have armor on the ship. So then after it's not until you knock down all the armor that then you can do actually real internals. In other words, an internal that's not an armor. And then you have to roll each bit of damage, and you apply it on the use a damage allocation chart, and the damage allocation chart is based on a 2d6 for each value. And of course, when it comes to damage allocation, you have the bold boxes, and those bold boxes you can hit once for each volley, and then you move on to the next box. And there's also different allocation procedures from within damage allocation itself. In the case of phasers, every third phaser has to be your best phaser, and that's for that volley. Now, when it comes to heavy weapons, every third heavy weapon, not per volley, but third internal, every third heavy weapon that gets destroyed, that one has to be your best heavy weapon. So, you know, those are minor little things that you have to. Now, going back to damage allocation just for a moment, there for this is for general ships. This is not for PFs. PFs have their own damage allocation. Same for like monsters, they have their own. The case of like dragons actually have a separate damage allocation chart for dragons. But also, you have different, like it comes to like the Omega, the ones who have dark energy weapons. I forget the empire that has that. But basically, they have a whole different chart for that damage allocation. I kind of modified the damage allocation chart, which is interesting. It's pain in the butt. But yeah, you can do it. I'll end up right here, which is something which got heavily modified with the Captain's Edition of the rules. This is before, you know, this is as of the Captain's Edition, which is after the Commander's Level Edition back in the Captain's Edition, I think, came out, in the 80s. I forget exactly when at the moment. But one thing that changed was self-destruction. It was actually not even self-destruction. It was blowing up the ship. Self-destruction, you can actually you can self-destruct a ship. It's rare that you actually would ever do this. According to D5.11, because D5 is the self-destruction one, self-destruction automatically takes place unless the captain is not in control of the ship. Okay? Explosion. When a ship is destroyed in combat, it explodes. Immediate self-destruction procedure is used to determine the extent of the explosion. You have to look at the master ship chart. And those explosive strengths were severely brought down. Severely. So, of course, there's one rule which is kind of interesting, but it's actually they had it as part of self-destruction, but they moved it to a separate section. They're just mentioning here, which is D5.6, is catastrophic damage. That's the other section, which is actually D21, and they actually go through catastrophic damage. I'll mention it here, and I'll talk about it a little more later on, but catastrophic damage is interesting in that catastrophic damage itself, basically, you have to look at the amount of damage that's coming in, that this volley is coming in going, that's going to blow up my ship. So basically, it gives you the ability to have a saving grace. You can immediately announce abandon ship and save your crew before your ship gets blown up, which is I've used it once, which was interesting, because that was when I was playing the Andromedans and playing the Desecrator Starbase, and the Desecration Starbase went boom, and I called catastrophic damage on it because of just the amount of damage it just took. It was so incredible that. And this was using the old explosion strength rules, which is I got to see if I can get a copy of those. I got to see if Where's 23 that has commander's level rules around, because if it does, I might get a copy just for the plain simple reason of reading the explosive strength stuff. And read that to you to say, okay, this is how bad it was back in the day. So you can truly understand what a huge change it was. But anyway, I think I will wrap up here with that. We'll end here at rule D5, and so that, you know, we can move on to next week, maybe move on to the fire control systems, which is relatively simple. You know, there's a lot of rules in. Here's the thing, just a reminder. One of the reasons why I'm doing this is because of a lot of people, they see the SMB rules, they see this big, thick book, and they go, man, that's just way too complicated. And it really is not. As I mentioned before, I'm not sure how many times, but definitely I've mentioned it before, which is the biggest issue with the reason why SFB has so many rules is because of the rules lawyers. Basically, it is very careful about explicitly noting and making rules about the different interactions of the different systems. That's why it's so large. That's why in Federation Commander it can be so much smaller, because you can boil it down. You know, you don't have to hit every single interaction with FedCom. So, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.